Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the multi-streaming voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, indeed. Multitasking, I would say. But have I done that before? Is that why you haven't done multitasking?
No, okay. Just something different.
Multi-streaming, that works as well. Not a word, not a thing, but, you know.
Okay, your obsession with words continues.
Well, just the fact that, you know, you claim to be quite tuned in when it comes to the English language.
Okay, never claimed, but fine.
Well, I mean, you insinuate. That's a great word, by the way.
So what have you been doing?
No, yes.
Tasking or streaming aside?
Well, you could say both. So I have got several games going on at once on a Saturday now. I can't reveal my sources, but I've got a way in which I can stream more than one game at a time. So it means that I'm like the mad professor. I sit there in my office and I've got six iPads and a monitor. So I've got seven games going on at one time.
Proper technology.
It's impressive. I'm impressed with myself. The great thing about watching goalkeeping is that you don't necessarily need to watch the entire game especially when you're watching it on a screen. Different if you're at a game of football, because then, of course, you can get a feel for what the goalkeeper's about. And when the ball's up the other end, you can still kind of see what they're doing, what their positioning is, what they're shouting, communication, etc. But obviously, when you watch it on the TV, there's only so much that you can see. So to stream or to watch more than one game at a time, especially if you're just watching goalkeepers, kind of works.
Okay, so how's the setup? Because I'm picturing screens all over the wall. A bit Keys and Gray-esque.
That's the dream.
Keys and Gray. Why do we say Keys and Gray still? We still say Keys
still,
and Gray.
Still.
Neville and Carragher-esque.
Okay, yeah, that's the dream. Okay. That's what I want to aim towards. Of course, there is a certain expense to that. I've actually got this dream of having 11 screens and having it in a football formation. Now, I don't know what formation, but that's what I'm aiming towards, just to sit there. I've actually got quite a big comfy chair. I did invest in that. I thought that was quite an important part of this setup. So sit there in my big chair and have a formation in front of me of good-sized screens, sat there with my notepad and pen, just watching goalkeepers from around the world.
Okay, and the games you watched this week?
Well, actually, I say that, and I didn't watch that many. I only had two on.
Shambles.
Absolute shambles, but I had two on. They were two very good games.
Two.
It was, yeah, I know. I probably should have gone for more. The reason I didn't, actually, because the plan would ordinarily be a couple from the Championship, couple from League One, couple from League Two. Of course, there wasn't League One or League Two, so it was FA Cup, and I actually did struggle to stream the FA Cup for some reason, but the Championship ones I could, so I did choose a couple there which were good games. Luton versus Stoke, very good game, watching of course Sluga and Joe Bursic, so we'll be talking about them at some point in the pod. And the other game I watched was Hull versus Barnsley, two teams at the other end of the table. Really interesting lineup, a debut for Nathan Baxter, of course on loan from Chelsea, and the very impressive Brad Collins, who, despite Barnsley's position, is fair to say, is having a good season. So again, we'll talk about those later too.
Very good.
There you go. Just trying to add a little bit more depth to what it is that we offer here.
Speaking of which, a slightly different setup this afternoon due to unforeseen circumstances, but hopefully the sound won't retract from... Hopefully the sound's okay, who knows?
I think it'll be fine.
I think
it'll be fine. I mean, look, we can just be honest. We're just using an iPhone.
Yeah.
That's technology these days.
We've had to multitask.
I know you're not a fan of technology, Matthew, but that's the best that we can offer
today,
I'm afraid.
It is. Hopefully it won't retract from the niche goalkeeping expert content we're about to offer.
Indeed. Should we crack on?
On with the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, we shall start at the London Stadium, where West Ham beat Liverpool, Richard, by 3-2. 3 goals that goalkeeper Alisson may come into question for. I don't know how you feel about this. Where would you like to start?
Oh, plenty to talk about. I kind of feel like this will be the core of this week's pod, because I felt the need to put out a tweet. I knew the second I was putting out the tweet, or even before putting out the tweet, that by me putting it out, there'd be a lot of people that would come back instantly and say, no, what are you talking about? No chance. For me, it was a foul, the first one. And that was my tweet, was just essentially to say that it was a foul. And I stand by it. And it's so interesting, because this is the kind of one that you'll see over and over and over again. And it will be one that will be 50-50. Some will be given, some won't. For me, I go back to the real simplicity of what a foul is. And yeah, everyone can say Agbonna, he's challenging, he's got every right to challenge. Absolutely, he's got every right to challenge. My question will always be, did he make contact with the football? No, he didn't. Did he impede Alisson? Well, yes, he did. His arm did contact Alisson, and it moved Alisson significantly, so he wasn't able to punch it in the way that he would, and the ball has ended up in the net because of it. So for the life of me, and I know we're going to disagree on this, so but I'm still going to say it, for the life of me, I cannot understand how someone can say this isn't a foul unless you are an outfield player and you are considering yourself challenging for that ball and you would feel hard done by if that wasn't given. But for me, blatant foul. It did impact Alisson. He was nudged. Ogbonna didn't touch the ball, therefore foul.
Blatant foul.
Blatant foul. Because, look, and this is the one where, and I put it out, and in fairness, actually, I didn't get as much stick as I thought I would. And actually, when I saw a lot of the stuff on social media, I would probably say 60-40 in favour of people saying it was a foul, which surprised me. I thought it'd be more people saying it wasn't a foul. A few people came back to me straight away and said they didn't think it was. But yeah, for me, blatant for the fact that he hasn't won the ball and he has impacted Alisson. And in the end, that's why the ball ended up in the net. If he hadn't nudged Alisson significantly, which I go back to this point I've made so many times, when a goalkeeper is challenging aerially for a football and you are nudged, you're nudging the elbow, you're nudging the shoulder, it only needs to move your hand by an inch and you're not going to be able to catch the ball. So it's so different to two players going for a header. Because yeah, if you both challenge for a header and you both get ahead to the ball, that's fine. But when you're trying to catch a football or you're trying to punch a football, an inch is the difference between him punching it 30 yards down the field or punching it his own goal.
Okay, so naturally, Jurgen Klopp was not happy with the goal that was conceded. Trent, after the game, Trent Alexander-Arnold, interestingly said, could have gone either way, you know.
Yeah.
We'll take it. Like you said, sometimes it goes 60-40. I guess my question to you here is, what's Ogbonna supposed to do? Because if he doesn't jump, then he hasn't got a chance of scoring. Mm. He's not looking at Alisson. Alisson is behind him. As we saw, Alisson was very occupied with Mikel Antonio and trying to get involved with him. So is that then a foul? What Antonio is doing to you, is that then a foul as well?
I mean, that's frustrating. That is frustrating. I used to hate it when you'd have a player on you and they would use their arms, their body to trap you in and obstruct you, effectively. But it's never, ever going to be given as obstruction, or they'd stamp on your feet or pinch you and all that that used to go on. So here's the one for you, because at the same time, you're right, you don't know who's behind you, but in the same way in which a ball's kicked towards a striker and he's backpedaling, jumps up and elbows a player in the face, he still gets sent off. He doesn't know the player's there, but if he's got a flailing elbow and it's hit the guy in the face, he's getting sent off. Not only is it a foul, he's getting sent off. So in this situation where he's got a flailing arm, which he hasn't got control of, which has impacted Alisson, it's a foul. So what does he do? Look, there's not much he can do. That's the truth. If his arm hits Alisson, it's a foul. If it doesn't, and he manages to get a flick on it and scores, fantastic. Like, that bit's out of his control completely. Or you jump without your arms, which, of course, is unrealistic, and that won't happen. So I just think it's one of them that if Alisson doesn't come and he gets a flick on it, then great, great goal, well done. But while the keeper's coming, if your flailing arm impacts the goalkeeper, I think it's a bit different if it's your head, because that is what you're going for the ball with. I think if it was his head that impacted Alisson's hand, I might be talking a little bit differently. But I think the fact it was Ogbonna's arm, that's what makes it a foul. Did I make a point?
You made a point. Yeah, I still don't agree with you on it.
I would say the second goal, I think he'd be more disappointed with than the first. And we're going to talk about all three goals and even the third to an extent. The second goal, only for the fact that I think you've got covering defenders. And if anything, in that moment, the ideal play would have been to have dropped that little bit deeper. Now, it's a very difficult decision to make. You see a player bearing down. You think it's going to be a one-on-one. So naturally, you come towards the penalty spot, edge of the box to close down the angle. But then when Van Dijk starts to come across, if he could have then dropped to 3-4 yards, it would have been a very difficult finish, because I think that Van Dijk would have got there in time to mean that he would have needed to have got the shot away, and it would have then turned into a shot from 20, 22 yards. And of course, if Alisson's 3-4 yards off his line, it would have needed a very, very good finish to beat him. In the end, he didn't quite get close enough to make it a spread, wasn't quite far enough away to mean that it was a shot, and it made the save very difficult. The fact that it then squirms through him obviously doesn't look great, and that's what a lot of people have picked up on, is that as opposed to the decision before that, whether you come that little bit further or whether you drop back. And I think in hindsight, dropping back towards his line would have made a bit more sense.
Can I come back to the first goal?
You can. Yes.
I'm still not done.
You're still
with
not
this.
Done with that. No, okay,
no.
Fine.
No, I wanted to clarify that I absolutely agree with you that there should be more protection in these scenarios. I go back to a couple of seasons ago, the Wolves Newcastle game. It was Willy Bolly, I think, wasn't it, on Dubravka, where he basically had his arms wrapped around him and it was given as a goal. But again, if Ogbonna can't jump and flail his arms, he basically has to stand still, and then he gets lambasted for his manager for not challenging aerially. Two, is football a non-contact sport? And three, if that is a striker and a defender and the striker's running through on goal, and just as he's about to shoot, the defender gives him a little nudge, at which point he goes off balance, his shot hits the corner flag because he's not got a proper shot on it, is that then a foul, or is that okay? Or is that not the same thing, or is it the same thing?
No, I know your point. So I go back to my initial point. If it's the striker that's got a goal kick coming towards him, he's backpedaling, jumps and elbows a guy in the face because he's got a flailing arm, is that a foul, or is it a red card, or is it neither? I mean, it's the same situation. You know, you're not necessarily... It is what it is. I mean, like that as an example, I would always say it's a foul if you've got the flailing arm and you hit someone. I think there's been a few red cards given over the years when you think, there was no intention there. Like, he's just jumped and used his arm. Sometimes there's absolute intention, of course, and they know who's there and they're trying to catch them. So I'd go back to that scenario where I think it's just the fact that you are slightly out of control. Of course you will be, because you are facing, he can't see what's behind him, but I'll always think it's a foul if you do catch someone. And unfortunately, the thing is, it always looks a lot softer on goalkeepers. That's the point as well. I think it's different as well, that if you're catching someone in the face, it can look quite brutal at times, whereas you don't have to give a goalkeeper much of a nudge. And because it's such fine margins you're dealing with as a goalkeeper, whether you're going to catch it or punch it, you actually consider punching a football, it needs to be bang on, a millimetre, 2 millimetres off, and that could be the difference of 20 yards in terms of distance. So you're talking about such fine margins, and that's why it will look soft a lot of the time. And of course, ex-outfield players, it's easy for them to be on their high horse and say, oh, look how soft that is, goalkeepers overprotected. What was the Lineker quote? We know they're a protected species. Well, yeah, we are, because it's a completely different sport. And actually, we do need to be protected, because otherwise that slight nudge will make a difference. Now, in terms of the example you gave, it is a good question, because then this is where, and I think Trent said it, it will sometimes go your way and it will sometimes not. Now, for me, that one, I thought there was enough contact to make it a foul, but it is a judgment call. And when it goes to VAR, do you know what? If it was an ex-goalkeeper that was sat doing VAR, they'd probably give the foul. Like, I'm really aware of that. And that's, of course, why it wasn't changed, or the decision wasn't changed, probably wasn't a big enough error, or even an error, depending on where you're coming from, for them to make that change. But look, it is a fascinating discussion point. I'm always going to probably err on the side of the goalkeeper. That's who I am. But at the same time, it kind of is, yeah. But I do, look, I'm not just saying this in a way to just stand up for goalkeepers at every possibility, because at the same time, as I've mentioned, I think there's certain things Alisson could have done on the second and even the third, which we'll no doubt mention in a minute. But I just felt really sorry for him on that first one, because I'm not sure what else he could have done in order to affect the play positively.
So the third?
Yeah. But actually,
was it in his head then for the third goal?
I mean, look, it would be really interesting to know, in that Alisson's one of the most mentally tough goalkeepers out there, and he has to be, given what he's done and how successful Liverpool have been. There have been one or two situations. I know the Man City game last season when one error led to two. And certainly in this game, I wouldn't say it was his finest game. As I say, I think the second goal he might look at and think he might have done something differently. The third goal for me is more the defending. I know it was really praised in terms of the attacking play, blocking off players, creating the runner, and it was very, very clever. And I think it was just difficult for Alisson, in that he's been blocked in. So the only question I'd have is whether you can then have a strategy to create a bit of space. And goalkeepers have got different ways of doing this, where you are effectively having to foul the person on you. But they're fouling you in a way, because they're blocking you in. But you almost have to really shove them out of the way to give yourself that yard. And then once you've got that bit of room to operate, then that ball that comes in initially, look, if no one's on Alisson, that ball that comes in initially, he backpedals two steps and he claims it. The fact that he's fighting with Antonio, I think it is at the time, he isn't able to move until late, by which point, of course, there's a free header at the far post. So it's not necessarily this particular ball, but it's more just the strategy that you adopt when you have got someone on you. And it just felt like he struggled with this all afternoon, couldn't buy space. And by the way, he's probably the best in the league now, Antonio. Used to always be Kevin Nolan, if you remember. Kevin Nolan was phenomenal at blocking a goalkeeper in. I kind of feel like Antonio may have taken that tag now.
Okay, over to Brentford, and Brentford 1, Norwich City 2. Tim Krul, 3 very good saves in this one, 2 from Christian Norgaard and 1 from Sergi Canos. Celebrating too, we like to see that.
We do indeed. Yeah, I thought he was excellent. Really good reaction save with his feet. Brilliant save to his left shoulder almost, but really strong. It was one of them where a lot of the time you see that and it hits the goalkeeper and still finds its way into the corner. And the save he made towards the end as well, sharp down at his near post. You could just see, I mean, he always plays with passion. That's something you'd say about Tim Krul. He's always got that energy about him. And credit to him, because it's not easy when you're a goalkeeper of a team that are down the bottom. Of course, winless prior to this. But when you've got a goalkeeper like Tim Krul, you know he's not the type that's going to get affected negatively by the results, and certainly showed that in this game.
We spoke about Fernandes last week. I don't think there was too much he could have done with the goals that were conceded. But is it any coincidence now that since Raya has been out of the Brentford side, that's 5 goals conceded in 2 games and 2 defeats as well?
Yeah, look, I think I might have said it on the last pod. I think it's a massive, massive loss. You know, a lot's talked about Raya and some of the shot stopping and his distribution being what it is, but it's bigger than that. And this is the bit about goalkeeping that for all the stats that are out there on goalkeepers, for me, there is something about having goalkeepers that seemingly find a way to win or really sort of fit into a side and a structure. And I think when you've got someone like David Raya, he is the undisputed number one at that football club. He's been so, so good for so long now, just fits what they do beautifully. Obviously, we talk a lot about the crosses he comes for and just how aggressive he is in his style. So I think anybody stepping into his shoes is going to be very, very difficult. The fact that they've gone for someone who doesn't necessarily know the Premier League, look, that's Brentford style, so I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong in that. I just think they're such tough shoes to fill. Now, it's not been an ideal start by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he had a real tough game at Burnley. And although this game was better on a personal perspective, of course, to lose at Norwich to Norwich at home, you just worry a little bit that losing Raya might impact those around, especially given that the results haven't gone their way. So yeah, I think in terms of a task, that is probably the toughest task in the Premier League right now that Fernandes has got.
Chelsea 1, Burnley 1. And Nick Pope, arguably his best performance this season, I suppose you could say. A couple of very good saves from Callum Hudson-Odoi. Another one from Jorginho, a header that was flicked on from a Reece James in swinging cross. Good performance from him.
Really good, really good. The thing I actually wrote twice was clever parry. So the first one where the ball's whipped across him and he's parried it back from where it came, I thought was a brilliant, brilliant save for the fact that I think he knows there's a player lurking to his right-hand side. If he did the standard parry, like you're always taught to parry wide, I think if he did that, it ends up in a goal because the player is there. So I think he's got the awareness, the peripheral vision in order to know that he's there. So he did everything he possibly could to parry it back the way it came. I thought that was very good. And similarly, I think it was the header, wasn't it, down to his left, or certainly the shot to his left, which he got two hands to, parried it for a corner, which again, the parry had to be perfect. Otherwise, there was a player lurking.
Yep, and nearly got an assist too. A lovely drive right at the death when Burnley nearly stole it. Matty Vidra latching onto that, but not able to get it over Edouard Mendy. One apiece, it finished 2-0 it finished at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Manchester City, or 0-2, I should say. Now, I was flabbergasted with the stick that David De Gea received after this game, and maybe I'm way off the mark here, but we watched this game together, and in that first half, he was absolutely brilliant. A save from Gabriel Jesus, Joao Cancelo twice, his own man Victor Lindelof, good save from Kevin De Bruyne, two, and then the goal, the second goal from Bernardo Silva. Roy Keane, after the game, did say, "Look at Shaw and De Gea. What chance have you got in this game? I've been cross with these fellas for years. I give up on these players. They are international footballers." And Gary Neville was equally as scathing during the game towards De Gea for that goal.
Yeah, I mean, he was their best player on the day. They were very poor. And if it wasn't for him, it would have been a lot more. The bit that baffles me is that, let's turn this round, and you had a striker that in the first half scores a hat-trick but then misses a sitter at half-time, and they go in at half-time 4-3 down. Are they then absolutely caning that striker for missing the fourth goal, or are they praising for the 3 goals prior? You know, and I just think there's a slight bias, I guess. And again, we can talk about it being outfield pundits that will play its part. Of course, they're seeing it from their perspective, but it just baffles me that that was the focus. Yet had he conceded one of the 4 great saves before that, that he wasn't expected to save, then nothing would have been said. Like, they're almost forgotten the moment that goal goes in. And by the way, that goal, we've all been there. The ball gets whipped in. The moment that you see Luke Shaw switch off, as a goalkeeper, of course, you see that. And naturally, you then feel in that moment the situation's under control. So do I think David De Gea should save it? Yes, he should. But it is the reaction of Luke Shaw, which then impacts David De Gea. And of course, it almost comes to him by surprise. And he can't figure his hands out. And in the end, can't get the parry around the post. And it's a real messy one and a horrible one as well. Because for all the places it could have gone, it somehow squirmed in that near post. But for me, so much of that is down to the reaction of Luke Shaw, almost looking like, oh, that's going out of play. That's fine. I'll just guide ride this one out. And so, of course, David De Gea is relaxed in that moment. The moment he relaxes, of course, it is a great finish, by the way. How he's managed to get it back towards a goal, it's very, very good. But it is a horrible moment for David De Gea. But that should not take away from all the great stuff he did prior. Some of the saves he was making were excellent.
The argument that you gave about the striker, I totally hear what you're saying. But is that where we actually turn around, and we do this podcast obviously for a specific reason, but is that where you put your hands up and go, do you know what, it just sucks to be a goalkeeper sometimes? Because I guess an argument that could be posed, and I'm not agreeing with it, is that a striker's job is to score goals. So in your scenario, that striker has scored three goals but missed one sitter, but he scored three goals. And then you could say, well, a goalkeeper's job is to make saves. So he's made the four saves, but the goal he's conceded is arguably more costly.
I know what you're trying to say. And actually, if you'd said it slightly differently, I'd agree. Because if you say a goalkeeper's job is not to make mistakes, then yeah, you're right. But then that's the whole problem, is I think that's how it's viewed. I think in England, look, by the way, abroad, this doesn't necessarily apply, but you'll see why it does in a second. Abroad, they don't necessarily rank or rate English goalkeepers. So it's very rare you see an English goalkeeper go to the MLS or to Germany or France or Italy. Like, name a top goalkeeper that's gone there. You know, you've got the likes of Joe Hart and a couple of others. But even Joe Hart, when he went, didn't really work out. You very rarely see that, because they all value their own goalkeepers. Now, for me, one of the big reasons that is the case is because of the punditry, because of how goalkeepers are seen. The whole cliche of being a second-class citizen, that's a, you know, a classic one that goalkeepers talk about, being a second-class citizen. That's not the same in other countries. Like, in America, for anyone that watches ice hockey, it is the most sought-after position in ice hockey. American goalkeepers over the years have always been lauded. You know, you look at the likes of Brad Friedel, Casey Keller, Tim Howard, you know, really seen as being key players. And it's always highlighted after the game how many saves they made, you know, and that's a big thing. You know, kept a shutout and he made eight saves. I don't know. I mean, that was pretty terrible. But
should I edit that out? Or keep probably, that? I'll keep
probably,
it in.
No, I probably should edit that out. But no, my point being is that they're seen in a different way. Now, of course, look, David De Gea isn't English. I get that. But he is playing over here, so he is being seen in that. And I think a lot of it comes down to exactly that, is that you're right. A striker's job is to score goals. So if he scores, he can miss sitter after sitter and play terribly. But if he scores a last-minute winner, you've done very, very well. I still think it's seen that a goalkeeper's job is not to make mistakes. Now, I agree with that to a slight extent, but actually, if you were to flip that and say that a goalkeeper's job is to be proactive, come for the crosses, play on the front foot, great distribution, keep the ball as often as you can, make big saves when you have to make big saves, then actually you might come with the odd mistake, especially when you've got goalkeepers playing with that style. They could be incredibly effective but make a few mistakes a season, or you can have the ultra-safe goalkeeper that doesn't make a mistake but doesn't come for crosses, that just kicks it long every time. Like, there's still a lot of managers that would choose that goalkeeper because that's how we've been conditioned. We want our goalkeepers to be absolutely flawless. Absolutely.
Go on, then. Go on. I would say as well, and we've spoken about this before, just before we move on, that David De Gea's mindset really does seem to have shifted this season. You saw him after the goals that were conceded, and he was punching his post, really angry, as he was going down the tunnel at half-time. Punching the tunnel, really, really angry. And maybe the cameras haven't been on him in recent seasons for us to see that, but you just saw how disappointed and angry he was to have conceded those goals. Whereas last season, you take the Europa League final, for example, quite zen in everything that happened in that Europa League final. It seems like it means more to him again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I'm sure it, you know, as you say, I'm sure it's always meant something to him, but I would certainly agree with that. I wonder as well how much of it is that he knows the moment that goal goes in that everything prior to that's forgotten. You know, and that might have been the anger as well, that had that not happened, I think at half time they're talking about the brilliant David De Gea, maybe not Roy Keane because he's blatantly got some agenda there and just can't stand him. But, you know, I think the others would have been talking really positively about him and talking about some of the great saves. I mean, that one he made with his elbow, whatever it was, like shoulder, hand, dive into his right-hand side, that's a goal. How that hasn't ended up in the net, but the reaction in order just to get something up and get enough on the ball and for it to fire over the bar, then the save down to his right hand side, nice and sharp, good parry out. You know, you think of some of the saves, they're all excellent saves, and yet they haven't been mentioned.
Brighton 1, Newcastle 1. Only one real talking point here, and that is Robert Sanchez and the red card on Callum Wilson.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, look, it is a red card. I don't think he's got any complaints in the end. You could argue it saved the point. So it is what it is. I mean, the question would be whether it was the right decision to come out. Well, actually, in the end, it possibly was, because it has stopped the play there and then, and it has saved the point. They did actually make a good point after, in that you got the classic one, Lewis Dunk goes in goal, and I don't think he touched the ball, did he?
Ridiculous.
Which is crazy. Insane. That is crazy. And I mean, that's just, I suppose, where you talk about football and players having their own mind on the pitch and actually taking control of a situation, rather than, you know, I suppose one of the criticism about football, modern day football, is that you can become a bit robotic and just follow orders and just do the same thing over and over and over. But the realization that there's a guy in goal that's wearing outfield shorts and does not look like a goalkeeper, surely you would just pepper
him. Took him ages to get those gloves on as well.
Ah, yeah. I mean, very amusing, but surely you would just pepper him. Baffling. But I'm sure he was delighted the fact he didn't have to touch the ball. But now, from Sanchez's point of view, look, I don't think he's intentionally gone out to bring the guy down. I think it's one where he thinks he can come for the through ball. Of course, soon realizes he couldn't. You've got that split second decision once he's gone round you. Do I take him down or not? In this situation, it was the right thing to do. He was quite subtle about it. You know, it wasn't one where he's hacked out at him, but there is contact, and I think he'll happily accept the punishment.
Had to go to VAR, by the way. The ref didn't give it at first.
Wow.
Quite extraordinary. Arsenal 1, Watford 0, and a good performance from Ben Foster, his 500th career club game. Saved a penalty from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Good save from Gabriel. Another good save from Sambi Lokonga. Unfortunate to be on the losing side.
Yeah, I'd agree with this. I thought the penalty save was brilliant. How he's managed to get his arm back to kind of jam it between his hand and his leg, you know, great flexibility, the speed of reactions as well, because on a penalty, once you've already gone, ordinarily your hands will be flung to your right-hand side, to then somehow get his hand back and do what he did and effectively jam the ball in order to then get the second ball. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant penalty save. Really good save then with his feet. Again, I use the word flexibility, which is something about Ben. He's got this really powerful frame and has the ability just to do that so quickly, like get his feet, shift his feet out of the way and make the save. And then made a good one as well from distance late on, which I think was very good for the fact that I think he was unsighted, and actually the decision last minute to get the parry out wide to kind of manufacture the parry in the way that he did, I thought that was good too. So credit to him. I thought it was a good performance. In the end, of course, wasn't worth anything. I know there's a bit of controversy, obviously, over the goal. Watford kicking the ball out and Arsenal not playing back, which as a Watford fan, I was a little bit disappointed with. That being said, of course, Watford did have the opportunity to equalise. An Aaron Ramsdale mistake, I think it's fair to say, which we haven't said that at all this season. But I think it was, and I think he'd hold his hands up in that he didn't necessarily need to get involved, given that the defender was in control of the situation. And in the end, just created a bit of confusion by Aaron Ramsdale coming out in the way that he did and being as wide as he was. But this is where I think, as a goalkeeper, and we talk about it a lot, is that sometimes things go your way, sometimes they don't. Look, most goalkeepers in most games will make small errors. Errors we might not even see. Might be four or five a game where, and we've all had it as goalkeepers, you know you've got away with one. This was maybe a little bit bigger than that, but this is one of those moments where if that goes in, then in the same way that David De Gea is getting all sorts of stick at halftime, Aaron Ramsdale is getting all sorts of stick at the end of the game. The fact it doesn't, this will be forgotten. And actually all we see is Aaron Ramsdale, another clean sheet, another win for Arsenal. Since he's been in the team, I want to say they're top of the form table, and it's another tick for Aaron Ramsdale.
Leeds 1, Leicester 1. Kasper Schmeichel making a good save from a Jack Harrison deflected effort in the first half, but then the goal conceded from Rafinha. The classic case of the in-swinging free kick.
Yeah, I feel for him on this one. I do feel for him, because it's whipped in with such pace. I don't think defensively they're set up brilliantly, because the way in which it's whipped in, there's two attacking players that get across the front of this, and both have legitimate opportunities to kick the ball. Basically, two run across, and they both swung and missed effectively, which is why Kasper Schmeichel does what he does. You then naturally think one of them's going to catch it, and if they do, it's going to go to your left-hand side. So you take a step to your left-hand side. Of course, they both swing and miss, and it goes in the far corner. But I think there's such pace on the ball. When I've seen a few people talk about this being really black and white, and I don't think this one necessarily is. I would say that. And I know I'm someone that ordinarily would say go for the original ball. And I do stand by that, go for the original ball. I just think with this one, how that's been whipped in so low with this sort of pace, and there's no defensive player there to get there first, that baffles me. Now, you could, again, bring that back to Kasper Schmeichel and say, have you lined up your, not only the defensive wall, but your players in the middle correctly? I mean, often that will come down to the coaching staff more than the goalkeeper. But that was a bit for me that, in the end, killed Kasper Schmeichel. Two attacking players running across, such pace. I think most goalkeepers would have done what he did and taken the step to the left.
Like buses this weekend, the in-swinging free kick.
Yeah.
Because there were two other examples of this in the FA Cup first round. We'll quickly touch on them, because in the game between Gateshead and Altrincham, it was Matthew Gould in goal for Altrincham. Same thing happened, although from the other side of the pitch. And then in the game between Lincoln and Bowers and Pitsy.
Mm.
The number two for Lincoln, one of many number twos coming in this weekend, of course, for the FA Cup first round. Sam Long saved the in-swinger. Very good save.
It was a very good save. And you're right, there's similarities. The big difference was the pace on the ball. I think ordinarily you see it where it's more floated or it's whipped. There's a bit more height. It's coming in at head height, maybe just above. That's the difference. The one that Kasper Schmeichel faced, that's a shot. That's not a cross. That's a shot to the far post, which really should have been dealt with better by the defenders. But you're right. Certainly the save from Sam Long. That's ordinarily the advice I would give talking to a young goalkeeper is focus on the initial ball. And if something happens in between, then just be ready to react if you need to. But that initial ball, as long as you know, worst case scenario, you can dive full stretch and get a parry around the post, then anything else that happens, any other save you make, is a bonus.
And finishing off the Premier League, Southampton 1, Aston Villa 0. Just thought it was worth mentioning Emi Martinez. Two very good saves, one from James Ward-Prowse, the other one from Shea Adams.
The second save in particular for me is the save of the weekend. I just think that the athleticism, the power, when you see it from behind the goal and you see just how high he's got, because that's a looping header going in the far post. Firstly, his positioning needs to be spot on. Technically, this is one of the toughest saves to make as a goalkeeper. Back on yourself, top hand, and the power in order to get up there. You know, he's, what is he, 6'3", 6'4", if not 6'5". You know, he's a big guy. To show that power and athleticism, just thought it was a beautiful save.
Right, Richard, there's the music. Mm. The piano is playing, or the cello is strumming, or the double bass is strumming.
Good one strum.
A good strum. We do like a good strum. You are in your trench coat once again with your pipe. Still smoking your pipe.
Smoking my pipe. That's how I roll as a PI.
Who does smoke a pipe? You thought was... Who did you think it was? Columbo?
Yeah.
No.
It wasn't.
Not Columbo.
No.
Popeye.
These days,
there
I feel
go.
Like...
Popeye.
Yeah,
he smoked a pipe. Is that what PI stands for? There you go.
Pop-eye.
PI.
Clever.
Maybe that's what you were thinking.
Pipes have really gone out of fashion, haven't they, when you think about it? They really have.
Okay, so, yes, GKPI.
Yeah.
We're going to focus not on one goalkeeper, but an all-encompassing four goalkeepers from the two games that you watched this weekend.
This is it, going back to the master streamer that I am. No, it wasn't that. What was I?
You were a streamer.
I was a streamer, yeah, but you gave another. It wasn't master streamer, was it?
Multi-streamer,
that's the one. Yeah, no, I thought I'd just speak about the four goalkeepers that I saw. In particular, touch on Mr. Baxter, Nathan Baxter, of course, on loan from Chelsea to Hull. Bit of a surprise that he was given his debut, championship debut, because it's fair to say that Matt Ingram's played very well to this point. And from what I can understand, reading a few of the comments afterwards from the manager, it was more a case of just needing to change something, which, look, as a keeper, if you're Matt Ingram, I don't think you're overly delighted about that, because we've all been in that situation where you get that classic one from the manager, just wanted to change something, change it up. Well, look, in this case, it did work, in fairness. Although there could be an argument to say that they're against the Barnsley team who have been indifferent at best, and certainly on the day, they weren't great. And in fact, I will start with Brad Collins, because the amount of saves he had to make in this game, once again, I thought he was excellent. No chance on the two goals. A big thing for me, and I know we've spoken about Brad Collins before, but a big thing for me is the way in which he can manufacture a save. You know, he's one of these that, as much as you talk about a textbook goalkeeper, he is in certain aspects, but I think his biggest quality for me is that he does just find a way. You know, we talk about goalkeepers making big saves in the big moment, taking up the right position, good spreads, etc. Again, he did this at the weekend 4 or 5 times where his positioning was spot on, but always find a way to get a hand to it, to get a leg to it. Doesn't always look the prettiest, but always finds a way, or more often than not, finds a way to keep the ball out of the net. And once again, I think it's fair to say that he was Barnsley's star man on the day. Nathan Baxter, I thought, was very, very good. Didn't have a great deal to do in terms of shot stopping, but I thought on the whole, distribution long was solid. 1 or 2 out of play in the first half, but on the whole, I thought he was hitting areas very well in the way that Hull wanted him to. Made a good save low to his left-hand side in the first half. Ball moving a little bit, managed to parry it out for a corner and then came out well for a cross soon after that. But the thing that I was most impressed with from this performance was about 9 minutes to go. Hull were 2-0 up, but Barnsley was starting to generate a little bit of momentum. And there was a ball played through and it must have been from about 50-odd yards and it's been floated into the box and he's come about 16 yards in order to claim this ball. And in the end gets fouled. Someone comes in and smashes him. But just to show the bravery and intelligence to come for that ball, then when he does get fouled, and I don't know, and I'm saying this without knowing whether this is true or not, but he spends quite a bit of time on the floor. Now, my thinking straight away was, look, I'm sure there was a bit of an injury there. I'm sure there was a bit of a knock there. But actually, as a goalkeeper, to have that intelligence when you're under the cosh and you've taken a knock like that and you know that the physio can come on, take a minute or two, you know, get the magic sponge out, et cetera, et cetera. And that was it. Game over after that. Barnsley then lost all momentum in that moment. And I just thought, this goes back to what we said at the start about stats not being able to choose a goalkeeper sometimes. Something like that I watch, and in my mind, I'm thinking, that's so intelligent. You've found a way, not only firstly making a great decision to come for that ball, brave, your teammates are loving you, the fact you've taken the pressure off, but then to realise you've got a situation where you can legitimately stay down for a period of time and kill that game, which he did. I just thought really, really intelligent goalkeeping from a young goalkeeper making his championship debut. So a big well done to him. I thought Joe Bursic once again looked very, very good. Credit to Joe because he had a tough moment a couple of games ago against Cardiff. The game they were 3-0 up, drew 3-0. Since then, 2 clean sheets on the bounce away from home. Also did a similar thing to what Nathan did towards the end of the game, went down. Maybe not quite so cute as Nathan Baxter, it's fair to say, to the point where afterwards he was getting a little bit of stick from the opposition manager in the press. But again, I just think for a young goalkeeper to have that kind of awareness when you are 1-0 up, you're under the cosh, and to find ways to manage a game, that's the word I'd use, to manage a game. He did it on several occasions, deciding to go a little bit longer maybe at times. As I mentioned, going down with a slight injury that he had, just looked like a goalkeeper above and beyond his years. And up the other end, it was actually a very quiet afternoon for Simon Sluger. No chance on the goal. Brilliant goal it was from Stoke. No chance on the goal. Then after that, read a couple of through balls very well and handling solid throughout without really being tested overly.
Good stuff. Very good. Just to finish in the Championship, Marek Rodak, 5 clean sheets in a row now, Fulham winning at Peterborough. A few good saves in this one, a particularly good save from Johnson Clark-Harris onto the post.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, top hand, athleticism, flexibility, the speed of react, everything about this. Brilliant, brilliant save. I really hope now, you know, we've said this before on the podcast, and I don't want this to sound like a real pro Marek Rodak advert, but it just baffles me. You know, he should have been given his chance in the Premier League last season. Take nothing away from Areola, of course, he was excellent, but for everything that he's done, helping Fulham gain promotion before and now stepping in again and just showing how good he is. He is a Premier League goalkeeper. So from a personal point of view, being a bit of a goalkeeping geek, as I am, as we are, it was pleasing to see, or it is pleasing to see, that he stepped in and carried on exactly where he left off.
And 2 quite similar saves. Sam Johnston, a late save from Sporar. That was an important one for West Brom as they drew with Middlesbrough. And then Alex Smithies saving from Levi Colwill in Cardiff's win over Huddersfield.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, in that they're similar in the fact that both very, very close in, and it's more the fact that they've read the situation as opposed to anything else, really. So the Alex Smithies one in particular, phenomenal save. It's only 3 yards out, can't come for the cross, but he gambles to an extent that it's going to his left-hand side. And I say gambles, it's probably not the right word, because it's more of a prediction. You know, in that moment, he predicts that the ball is going to go to his left-hand side, spreads very well, and then it is a quick reaction, because as the ball then does go to his left, just a slight change with his wrist in order to get a parry. Point-blank save, brilliant save. And similarly, Sam Johnson, cross comes in, and I think there's a realisation that he's not going to be able to come for it, so he actually drops to his line, just gives himself enough reaction time, and it is a very good reaction on his line to make the save.
We are going to finish with the FA Cup first round. Of course, we're not going to go through all games because there were about 500. So let's just touch on some of them, because this is an opportunity, like we had in the Euros, to talk about a few goalkeepers, or at least mention a few goalkeepers that don't often get a mention on the podcast. So Tyler Dickinson at Hazen Yedding on loan from Wickham, and Sam Howes at Horsham, both lost to Sutton and Carlisle respectively, but solid performances from both keepers on those occasions. Stockport keeper Ethan Ross, a good save from Owen Doyle. That was a header late on, two apiece as they drew at Bolton. And Buxton of the Northern Premier League winning at York of the National League North, Theo Richardson denying Clayton Donaldson.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple there. So yeah, good save from Ethan Ross, low down to his left. Good reaction, good parry, good area. But certainly the save. So what was the name?
Theo Richardson.
Theo Richardson. So apologies, Theo, for not knowing too much about you. But this was a top, top save. The power that he's got in order to get up into the top corner. If you were to pause it the moment he makes a save, to generate that kind of power, to be that far off the ground, right up into the top corner. This is a championship, even Premier League standard save. You know, top, top save. So massive well done to him.
On the flip side, Jonathan Mitchell clattering into Chris Farino-Joseph to give away a pen for a Wickham equaliser. Duly converted by Joe Jacobson, Hartlepool and Wickham drawing 2-2. And Lee Burge, an error for the Mansfield goal. He gifted Reece Oates a winner, and that was at Sunderland.
Yeah, I felt for Lee Burge, because these games, when you're coming in, you've got a chance again just to stake a bit of a claim and show what you're about, and to have a moment like this where, look, they're trying to play out. It's the way Lee Johnson plays, and he's just misplaced the pass ever so slightly and paid the ultimate penalty. So a tough moment for him. And Jonathan Mitchell, yeah, look, it's one of them. You know, we spoke about this situation several times on the pod, where if you are ever so late when you're coming out for a punch, it always looks bad, of course, especially when you're going with your fists and they're going with their head. But if they do get there before you and you take him out in the way that he did, unfortunately, it's always going to be a pen.
Christian Walton with a penalty save. Always have to mention penalty saves. That was from Dylan Bahambula, Ipswich 1, Oldham 1. But the game involving Solihull and Wigan, It was this game. Ryan Boot repelling 6 Wigan efforts. It ended up in a 0-0 draw. But for all that Ryan Boot did, and what a performance it was, what was your save of the week, did you say?
I went for Martinez.
Emi Martinez from the Shea Adams header. This one for me, an incredible stop from Jamie Jones in for Wigan instead of Ben Amos.
It's up there.
Left hand onto the bar. Brilliant save.
It was a brilliant save. And that, again, I've used that word a few times today, jammed. You know, he almost jammed it against the crossbar. So again, you consider the amount of power he's got into that dive in order to get his left hand, I think it was, and get just enough in order to jam it onto the crossbar. Super, super save.
Jam. He's jamming.
He is jamming. Absolutely. Okay.
Right, Richard, we are done.
We are. No clean sheet club.
No clean sheet club, only the Championship and the Premier League. I thought, unfair.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Thank you.
I enjoyed that.
Good, did you?
Yeah, I did. I did. Again, like you said, slightly different setup for us today, but no, I think it's worked.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.